Told Pilecki embarked on what on the face of it sounded like a suicide mission. He deliberately let himself be rounded up by the Nazis so he could be sent to Auschwitz, the aim being that he could gather intelligence about the concentration camp. He survived the experience and even wrote a book about it, which has been published in English for the first time. It's called The Auschwitz Volunteer, and on the line is translator of the book, Jarek Garlinski. Good afternoon, Jarek.
Hello, Sean. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you too. At the time, and this was, as I say, 1940. I assume not much was known about Auschwitz, and it certainly wasn't known what Auschwitz would become.
Absolutely, and in fact, in his report, right at the beginning, he actually makes the point that no one, even in Warsaw, really knew what Auschwitz was.
And so, at the time, was there even an assumption as to what it was?
No, absolutely not. I mean, as far as one can tell, what they thought it was just another holding camp. But the idea of a vicious labor camp and what eventually became a death camp, I mean, nobody had even thought of something like that at that stage.
And at the time, it was Auschwitz was just for Polish prisoners. Was that correct?
Initially correct. It was set up for Polish political prisoners. And political, in essence, meant anyone that the Germans wanted sort of, put to one side, if you will.
And so, when he went there, his aim was to send back information about this. What was the method by which he was going to transmit this information?
But he didn't really know, to be honest. I mean, he went there it was a sort of military reconnaissance, recce, if you will. He wanted to see what it was. He wanted to see whether he could break out some of the guys who were in his resistance movement, but he'd no idea how he was going to send back information. And in fact, what he did initially was he actually sent out oral reports with people who were released, because people were released. They were released for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes the families bought them out. Sometimes they had connections, often through, say, neutral countries. Sometimes the Red Cross managed to get people out. Not very many, but anyway, initially he sent out oral reports through guys like that.
And at the time when he was sending out these initial reports, what were the conditions like?
Well, the conditions were pretty awful. It hadn't yet become a death camp. I mean, there were no crematoria, there were no gas chambers, but people were just being killed at random. And he writes, one of his initial impressions is they arrive at Auschwitz, they're being marched from the cattle wagons to the camp, and suddenly the Germans pick on a guy and say, hey, you run to that post over there. So the guy runs to the post, they mow him down with submachine gun fire, and then they pull another 10 guys out and they kill them on the spot for helping him escape.
Wow. So presumably he must have been very scared, given anybody there could be killed.
Absolutely. I mean, he was scared gutless. I mean, you know, as he admits himself, you know, there's an awful lot of initial survival depended on luck, where you happened to be in the row. I mean, he could have been one of those guys pulled out of the ranks and there was nothing he could have done about it. I mean, Chuck Norris couldn't have got away.
Yes. And now, and during the 3 years or so he was there, did the makeup of who the inmates were change?
Absolutely. I mean, after the initial Polish political prisoners, then the next great wave, this was obviously in 1941, after the German attack on the Soviet Union, the next great wave was actually Soviet POWs, prisoners of war. The Geneva Conventions were never really observed on the Eastern Front. The Soviet Union, I should point out, had never actually signed the Geneva Conventions. And so the Germans just brought them to Auschwitz, many of them, and in fact killed them in all sorts of ways. Over the course of the war, something like 3 million Soviet prisoners of war were killed by the Germans, POWs, mind. Then, as things moved along, that's when the Jews started to come, because the final solution wasn't ultimately decided upon until the beginning of 1942. So it was then slowly that the Jews started to come in ever-increasing numbers.
And did Witek see this begin to start?
Sorry?
Did Witek see this begin to start?
Yes, no. Pilecki absolutely did. He saw it. I mean, there were two factors here. First of all, like just about everybody, initially he couldn't really understand what he was seeing. You know, the idea of just taking people, men, women, children, small children, sticking them in a gas chamber and gassing them and then burning their bodies. I mean, it was too big to comprehend. The other important thing to recognize is the vast majority of people who died in the Holocaust in a camp like Auschwitz never actually were processed into the camp. So they never actually came into contact with people like Pilecki, because they just arrived and they sent them straight off to the gas chamber. So, you know, the prisoners actually in the camp couldn't always actually see exactly what was going on. But sure, they began to understand, words started to get out, people talked. And certainly by the time he escaped, he had a pretty good idea of what was going on there. And he was a decent, honest man. And horrified doesn't even get close to it.
And he was fairly sure. He was close enough to be able to say, write things like 1,000 a day are getting gassed.
Well, that's what he tried to do. I mean, the numbers himself, you know, he got numbers from all sorts of sources. And like many people right at the end of the war, his numbers were way too high, because at the end of the report, I think he does an extrapolation, coming to the conclusion something like 4 to 5 million people were killed there. And the generally accepted figure today, in 2012, it was somewhere like 1,100,000, of whom 90% were Jews. But certainly in the years just after the war, much higher figures were bandied about.
How did he finally get to escape from Auschwitz?
Well, you know, it's interesting. At the end, he got almost cocky, because he sort of, you know, he was looking at all sorts of ways of getting out. Because, you know, once you'd been in the camp some time, you had sort of privilege, isn't quite the word to put it, but he knew his way around. He could get himself moved to work, you know, different work details, different work parties. And one of the ways to get out was actually to be on a work party that worked outside the camp, which is what he managed to do. He and two of his mates, they managed to get themselves transferred to the bakery, and the bakery was outside the camp. And then when you got out from the bakery, and that wasn't all that easy necessarily, but you didn't have to go through barbed wire fences or anything like that.
Right, so, and then when he escaped, where did he go?
Well, he made for a contact he had, which was about 60K from Auschwitz itself, on the other side, near the town of Krakow, the city of Krakow. And ironically, when he got there, he, in very short order, actually came across the man whose name he had been using when he actually was in Auschwitz, because he didn't go to Auschwitz under his real name, Pilecki. He went under somebody else's name, and he actually came across that chap, Serafinsky.
And what happened then?
Well, I mean, it was extraordinary. In fact, poor old Serafinsky suffered for that afterwards, because, you know, the Gestapo came looking for him, and they brought a picture, and they realized it wasn't the same guy, but they eventually later came round and worked him over. I mean, he survived, but gosh. But no, after that, you know, Pilecki hung around, recovering, because he had to recover from it. His big beef was that the Polish Home Army, with Allied support, didn't attack Auschwitz to try and liberate the prisoners. And even afterwards, you know, when it was explained to him, that was completely, utterly impossible. He got so angry about the whole thing that he didn't really take that on board and believe it. And it was impossible. I mean, the idea of folks attacking Auschwitz, liberating the prisoners. I mean, if they'd liberate them, what on earth would they have done with these people? But it was a non-starter.
He died before the war was over.
Well, no. His whole death is, it's going to undo the report, but no, it's completely dramatic in another way. After he gave up trying to get the Home Army to attack the camp, he became a member of the Home Army. He took part in the Warsaw Uprising, where, in fact, he fought incredibly gallantly. He was then taken prisoner of war by the Germans. He was released at the end of the war. He joined the Polish Second Corps, which was fighting under British command in Italy, and he volunteered in 1945 to go back to Poland, where, I should point out, his wife and children still were. He volunteered to go back to report on conditions in Poland to the Polish army authorities in the West. The communist authority, because Poland was, you know, was being taken over by the communist authorities, they picked him up in 1947. They tortured him, they tried him, and in 1948 they shot him as a spy. They knew who he was and they knew what he'd done.
Thank you very much, Jarek, for talking to us today. That was Jarek Garlinski. He's the translator of the Auschwitz Volunteer.